All right, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Thursday, November 16th, 2023. Mike Adams here, and we are living through another insurrection in America. In fact, there were Democrat protesters in front of the DNC yesterday trying to break in, and they were protesting, of course, the bombing of civilians in Gaza, and they were wearing jackets that said, I think, ceasefire now. And I want to give you a little taste of this. Now, this is not the focus of today's podcast. We're actually going to talk about the cosmic test for your body, mind, and soul. But this is part of it. And so let me show you this. It's critical to understand what's happening in America and also kind of the contradictions that you will see on display here. For example, you're about to hear from a young woman who is very vocally screaming about how the Democrat Party has betrayed the idea of protecting life and standing for peace and so on. And yet, you know, the Democrat Party, of course, stands for abortion and murdering babies in America. So why wouldn't they support bombing babies in Gaza? I mean, the Democrat Party is not a pro-baby party. So young Democrats, they're maybe getting a little bit red-pilled at the moment, and they're finding out that their party doesn't stand for peace, but rather murder and war. But check this out.
Inside the Democratic Party headquarters, because this party claims to be on the side of life and peace and equality, and we're saying that we want them to live up to their values and oppose this horrific war and call for a ceasefire now, and we're being responded to by the police shoving anti-war activists down the stairs, shoving peaceful protesters back with their bikes. And because our party that 80% of us want a ceasefire, would rather beat up protesters.
Hold on.
All right. Fascinating there, right? But amazing the contradictions that someone can hold when they think they're a Democrat supporter. They think the Democrat Party stands for, you know, progress and love and peace and friendliness. And nope, they stand for murder. But then again, so does the GOP. I'm not singling out the DNC on this. The GOP stands for murder too. The GOP is genocidal. It should stand for that. What, the GOP, the Genocidal Operations Party or something, right? But let's go to this second video now, and there is a little bit of profanity in this video and the next one, but the second video shows you a little bit more of the aggression, the pushing, the shoving, the police interaction, and it makes you wonder, how come these people aren't arrested and thrown in solitary confinement and denied trial for a year plus and so on? You know, why aren't they considered insurrectionists and treated as such? The answer is, well, they're Democrats, so they can attack police with impunity, it turns out. Check out this video. All right, now we got one more video to play for you. Now, this one contains even more profanity, but again, it's important to recognize what's going on here and get a little taste of it. The fighting, the altercations, the heightened emotions, the engineered rage. This is all really important to witness. So check out this third video, which is about 1 minute.
Guys, violent motherfucker. It's a violent motherfucker. I can shut my cameras off. Oh shit.
Move.
All right, witnessing that, you know who's laughing in all of this? George Soros is laughing. The globalists are laughing. They're laughing because they found a whole new way to divide America. They found a way to cause chaos. And they've divided America over their support for Israel and Israel's ongoing genocide. But by the way, that support is plummeting. A new poll covered by informationliberation.com says, quote, U.S. public support for Israel plummets to just 32%. Majority back ceasefire. And this was a new poll, a Reuters Ipsos poll. And Reuters covered this, of course, wrote a story about it. Again, it shows it dropping to 32%. Now, you may recall that Netanyahu himself, in a video clip that I played a couple weeks ago, said that America's support for Israel was 80%. And he was right. It was 80%. Now it's 32%. And it's plummeting by the day. Won't be long before it's 25% and then 20%. Because more and more people are seeing the images, the videos, the horrifying images of children and babies being blown apart, body parts, of parents grieving and pulling their dead children out of the rubble. Because Israel is bombing hospitals, refugee camps, and residential living units, of course, across Gaza. This is indiscriminate bombing. It is a war crime. And Netanyahu is a war criminal. There's no question about it. He should be arrested and prosecuted by the International Criminal Court. And you know how a lot of Jews like to say never again after the Holocaust? Well, Benjamin Netanyahu woke up one day and he said, I'll do it again. He's doing it again. Just against another ethnicity instead of the Jews. He's doing to the Palestinians what Adolf Hitler did to the Jews. So Benjamin Netanyahu, or Benjamin, as I think it's pronounced, Netanyahu is just, he's like the dark, you know, reanimated zombie skeleton of Adolf Hitler, just in a flesh mask, a flesh suit. But he's doing the same thing. What a sick, demented person. But anyway, getting back to the main point here, the big topic for today is that this is a cosmic test for your body, mind, and soul. So those are the three levels of your experience. You have your physical body, your intellectual mind, and your eternal, non-material soul. And who you are is a representation of these three layers. This Trinity, which is also reflected in religion, of course, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, right? But the body, the mind, and the soul is what we're focused on today. Now, this test, and we have all been through this test, especially since COVID, this test gets more and more difficult with every event. And fewer people are passing the test. They're failing the test. Now, the first test is the test for your body. Will you sacrifice your body to a bioweapon? Or will you defend your body? Will you protect yourself? And, you know, dignify your physical body by protecting it against bioweapons that are designed to disassemble it at a cellular level or even a genetic level. So this gets to the vaccine jabs. And those who initially failed the test, although, by the way, the good news is you can always correct your path. You can succeed even if you failed it early on. So if you took one or two of the initial jabs and then you realize, oh, wait a second, that's crazy. I need to detox that stuff. I need to stop damaging my body with a spike protein. Well, then you're doing great. Then you pass the test. But for those who took the jabs and keep taking the jabs and keep begging for more jabs, give me more vaccines. And they're taking the flu shots and then the flu combo shots that are coming with COVID-19 jabs and more mRNA. It's like an mRNA buffet. They are failing the test. And this is the simplest test. They're failing the simplest test. So all those people who lined up and got vaccinated, they failed the test. And if they keep getting vaccinated, they keep failing the test. And again, that's the easy test. So most of the people listening to this passed that test. Even though society made it difficult, your family and friends, your job, your coworker, your government, your authorities, they all told you, you got to get the jab, right? You got to get the jab if you want to fly. You got to get the jab if you want to, you know, visit family members. You got to get the jab. If you want to work here, you got to get the jab. If you want to come into this hospital or this nursing home or this care facility, there's a lot of pressure to get the jab. And by the way, it was a lot of gaslighting. It was a lot of bluster. It was like, oh, it's the law. No, it was never the law. They could never force it on you. It was all a giant brainwashing, gaslighting scheme. And they suckered a lot of people into it who then got the jab. And a lot of those people are now dead. And more are dying with each passing day, sadly. So that was the first test, the body test. The second test is the test over your mind. And the way this test happens is you get subjected to programming attempts, brainwashing, gaslighting, or emotional hijacking through the media and its psychological operations. So the media is constantly running psyops on you. And of course, the media is pushing disinformation on purpose. So is the White House. So is big tech. So is big pharma. And they have all these, you know, fact checkers and different organizations that claim to be the only trusted facts. They're the liars, of course. But if you fall for them, if you believe what they're telling you, then you've lost control over your mind. You have been mind controlled by them. And if you've lost control, then you've failed the mind test. And also, if you've lost control over your emotions, because there is emotional hijacking taking place, especially right now during this, you know, Israeli-Hamas situation, a lot of emotional hijacking, a lot of false information designed to try to trick you, like, oh, the claims that, oh, Hamas baked a Jewish baby in an oven, right? You heard that story probably completely made up. No evidence that that happened at all. Or that Hamas cut off the heads of 40 babies, Jewish babies. Never happened. Completely made up. And you still hear people repeating that. Oh, this is why we have to bomb, we have to kill them all. Why? Because they beheaded 40 babies. Well, where's your evidence that they beheaded 40 babies? And the answer is usually, well, you can't ask that. That makes you an anti-Semite, right? So they have been mind controlled and emotionally controlled and pushed into a rage by lies, media lies, government lies, military lies, Pentagon lies, right? IDF lies. So they've failed the second test. If you can't maintain control over your mind and your emotions, then you can't pass the second test. The third test, oh, by the way, the good news is, just as with the first test, if you've been failing the mind test, you can change your course of action and you can start to beat the test. You can actually pass the test. It just means having the maturity, the wisdom, and the experience to not allow your mind, your thoughts, and your emotions to be hijacked by the psyops that are being constantly pushed on you by the media, the government, and sometimes family and friends. All right, the third test is your soul. This is the most difficult test. This is a test that almost everybody fails. The soul test requires that you hold the line on ethics. And when I say ethics, there is an absolute definition of fundamental ethics which encompasses the protection of innocent life. So if you believe that you are alive, then you obviously believe that you have consciousness, right? That you are experiencing life from your first person perspective. And therefore, we live in a world of other people who are conscious, other people who experience the world through their perspectives, and they're capable of suffering and pain or of joy and happiness as well. And thus, if we have any ethics at all, it must be based on helping to protect life and to end human suffering and to bring joy or happiness or safe conditions to as many people as possible. But I don't mean with a, you know, government-controlled police state society. I just mean, let's stop bombing children, you know? Let's have basic police on the streets. Yes, I get that. But let's not turn the whole country into a police state. So basic ethics are not really that difficult to define. It means valuing life. And that value is based on the fact that you have consciousness. And that consciousness gift is universal. So we're all conscious beings. We all can experience pain and suffering. And it is worth our time to help other conscious beings not experience pain and suffering. And so many people are failing that test right now because they're saying no ceasefire, you know, keep on bombing. This tends to be the pro-Israel crowd at the moment. They keep bombing, you know, bomb more babies, bomb more hospitals. They might as well just be out there chanting, you know, kill, 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 because that's what they believe in. And they are failing the test. Their souls have a black mark on them. They will not be looked upon with a sense of favor by their God or their Messiah or whoever they believe in, or maybe they don't believe in anybody at all. But they will not be looked upon kindly because they don't believe in protecting the lives of other innocent people. They are complicit in genocide. That tends to be right now the pro-Israeli crowd. The pro-Palestine crowd at the moment, many of those people are also, they've been gaslit, they've been emotionally manipulated, and they don't in their lives actually practice a consistent philosophy. At the moment, they're opposed to bombing and killing children in Gaza, but on any other given day, they completely support murdering children in the womb, right? Or they support mutilating children in the surgery room in the hospital with a gender transformation surgery that, much like bombing children, actually results in body parts being removed. I mean, it's a sick twist. I'm even sorry to bring that up. It's a sick thing to mutilate children in the name of transgenderism, just as it's a sick thing to bomb children into bits using military explosives. They're both wrong. And yet, again, generally speaking, the pro-Palestine crowd right now, which consists of mostly, you know, left-wing, Democrat, young Americans, they absolutely support mutilating children and murdering children in the womb. So they don't have a consistent philosophy. And personally, I have no respect for people who don't have a consistent philosophy. I actually have more respect for people with whom I disagree if they have a consistent application of whatever they believe. I would respect that more compared to people who have no consistency and it's just whatever is the current outrage or whatever is the current thing or whatever is the current herd direction, you know, the sheeple, man, what can I do? How do I follow? You know, I don't respect those people at all. There's a lot of people like that, and that's most of the people that you see these days. They don't have a consistent philosophy, you know. For example, if you were to go to someone who's protesting and calling for a ceasefire, you would ask them, well, why do you support a ceasefire? And they might say, because it's wrong to bomb babies, right? And if you pry and you ask questions, so you're saying it's wrong to kill babies. Yes, it's wrong to kill babies. Okay, do you support abortion? And then they, you know, they would be taken aback. Well, that's not the same thing, they would say. The aborted fetuses are not human babies, they would say. And then I would answer and say, well, according to Netanyahu and the IDF, Palestinian babies are not humans either because they call them subhuman animals. So according to them, I mean, your logic of murdering babies in the womb actually sounds a lot like the IDF logic of bombing babies in Gaza. So what do you say about that? And then they, you know, you can't, you know, how dare you ask me a question that requires me to be consistent in my thinking? Basically, that's the answer you're going to get. So I don't respect most of the people protesting on either side because they don't think about things. They don't have a philosophy that counts. They're just NPCs going along with whatever rage has swept them up at the moment. No respect for those people. And by the way, you know, speaking of contradictions, I tweeted this out and also I posted it on brighteon.social. That's where I post first. And I'm also on Telegram at Real Health Ranger. But I'm a little bit fed up with RFK Jr.'s contradictions. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is now, he has big glaring contradictions that are not okay. And here's what I tweeted out. Three shocking, disturbing contradictions of RFK Jr. Number one, he believes in protecting children from vaccines, but not from bombs. You know, Children's Health Defense. It's all about protecting children from vaccines and mercury exposure and toxic, you know, metals and things like that. And I agree with that. But what about bombs? It seems like if you care about children's health, that the most important way to protect their health would be to make sure they don't get bombed. So where is RFK Jr. speaking out against the bombing of hospitals in Gaza? Oh, he's silent on that. Huh? Silent. I guess, you know, we have to save children from vaccines so that they can be bombed in Gaza. And that doesn't make any sense to me. I'm taken aback by that, actually. Point number two, he believes in free speech for vaccine critics, but not for Israel critics. I mean, RFK Jr. actually is in favor of blocking the speech of pro-Palestine groups at colleges and universities across America who are criticizing Israel. I mean, I guess he would say that those anti-Semitic. But he himself was labeled part of the disinformation dozen across America. He was condemned for speaking against COVID vaccines and speaking out against Fauci. He was condemned, and he argued, I think, quite eloquently at the time that it's critical for us to be able to engage in the freedom to speak so that we can hear both sides of an argument. But now when it comes to critics of Israel, his view is, oh, you're not supposed to hear that side of the argument. You can only speak if you're pro-Israel now, basically. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't have any respect for that obvious glaring contradiction. And point number three, he supports Israel to protect America's access to oil in the Middle East, but he opposes oil in America. You know, RFK Jr. is anti-oil, anti-coal, anti-fossil fuels, you know, very strongly, and he's got his reasons for that. But then why say, oh, we have to support Israel so we can have energy out of the Middle East? I thought energy was bad. I thought oil was bad. Why do you love it when it comes from, you know, Qatar, but you hate it when it comes from Texas? That doesn't make any sense to me. If we just extracted energy from America, guess what? Maybe we wouldn't need to pay billions of dollars to Israel and fight all these wars in the Middle East and have all this conflict there. Why don't we just drill for oil here at home and be energy independent like we were under Trump? And then stop fighting wars in the Middle East. How about that? There's an idea. But RFK Jr., of course, has a glaring contradiction on that very point. So I had to tweet that out because I am a person of principle. And it is fair. I understand that even my own philosophies have evolved over time. So there are many things that I would say today that I did not believe in maybe 5 or 10 years ago. But of course, with wisdom and age and experience, we learn and hopefully we solidify our philosophies and our belief systems and understanding of the world around us. So there are some things I've changed over time. However, I don't have contradictions in the present time. For example, I'm not here saying, hey, let's protect the lives of unborn babies, and then a day later saying, but it's okay to bomb them in Gaza, because that would be crazy. That would be a contradiction. I don't have any of those. Everything that I have, that I talk about, that I advocate is philosophically consistent with the idea of defending life, protecting life, defending liberty, the freedom to think, the freedom to speak, self-determination, these critical concepts. And every single thing that I talk about, every question you hear me ask in my interviews and so on, is consistent with those core beliefs that I just outlined. There are not any exceptions to that. I'm not into tribalism. I don't just suddenly abandon my principles because I want to be, you know, pro-Israel or pro-GOP or pro-Christian or any. I'm not tribal. I judge every tribe, by the way, based on its consistencies or lack thereof. What does it stand for? What are its actions? And frankly, tribalism is what's going to get us all killed. And there's way too much tribalism out there in society. People picking a side and then abandoning principles in order to support that tribe. And the tribe could be, you know, the Zionism tribe. It could be the GOP tribe. It could be the Democrat tribe. It could be the LGBT tribe, you know, anything like that. But this is what will lead to the destruction of society. It's all this tribalism. Oh, by the way, if you've been wondering, why is it that almost every member of Congress puts Israel first and America last? The answer, of course, is Jeffrey Epstein. You know the rest of the story. Jeffrey Epstein worked for Mossad. And Jeffrey Epstein would take governors and members of Congress and senators and corporate leaders and so on. He would take them on his plane, the Lolita Express. You know, Bill Clinton was a frequent flyer. And he would take people to Epstein Island and or to visit his, was it in New York City, I think it was, this building there. And he would then offer these people sex with children. And could be, I mean, children of whatever gender that the person wanted. It could be like gay child rape, or it could be, you know, heterosexual child rape, or it was always child rape though. And then Jeffrey Epstein had all these cameras running. He had cameras recording on the airplane, cameras in the building in New York, I think it was, of course, lots of cameras on Epstein Island. And the way I understand it is that a lot of these people, they knew they were being filmed and they didn't mind it. They didn't care because they really wanted to rape children. So they went along with it. And then Epstein had the blackmail. And that blackmail is owned by, of course, Mossad. And so Israel has blackmail on a vast array of U.S. lawmakers, senators, governors, business leaders, you name it. That is why everybody goes out of their way to be pro-Israel all the time, even when it makes no sense. You're like, why? What's the deal? Why did that person, why did that speaker, you know, suddenly come out on pro-Israel and everything, got to have more money for Israel? We have to put Israel first. Why? The answer is Jeffrey Epstein. Because there's some real child molesting perverts that run our country, in case you didn't know it. Child trafficking is a very, very real thing. Remember the, I interviewed Anthony Rubin from Muckraker a few weeks back, and he was walking up to people in airports, adults who were trafficking children in broad daylight in the airports. And of course, some of those adults were apparently CIA government employees. And he was filming it right there in broad daylight. These are children from south of the border. And they are trafficked with the help of the U.S. government. They are trafficked and put into the hands of pedophiles and child rapists. And Jeffrey Epstein was the king of that whole operation before he didn't kill himself. He was the king of it. And he would get all this compromising footage on everybody. And that is in play right now. So, frankly, Israel has a blackmail file cabinet that probably contains the most grotesque, horrific child abuse images that you could possibly imagine, and also featuring U.S. members of the Senate and Congress and what have you. So there you go. There's your answer. Now, let's go to a big picture video that will blow your mind. This video, I believe the woman speaking here is Laura Aboli. I think that's her name. And what she's about to tell you here in this video, it is 4 minutes, will blow your mind, but it will sound very familiar if you've been listening to me for any period of time, because, well, I've been red-pilling people about the exact same issues for quite a long time. But she puts it in a different way that is, well, especially effective. So listen to this video if you want to know the big, big picture of what this is actually all about. And that's why I'm talking about this cosmic battle for your body, mind, and soul. And I've talked about depopulation a little bit today, because remember, the big goal of the global controllers is the extermination of the human race. That's what they're really trying to achieve. And everything else, the wars, the bombs, the nukes that are about to go off, the financial collapse that's underway, these are all just kind of smaller maneuvers in the big grand battle, which is the battle to exterminate humanity. But listen to this video from Laura Aboli as she explains it in her own words.
The final goal is to eradicate humanity as we know it. Once you understand the final destination, it becomes much easier to look back and identify the psychological conditioning, the biological tampering, the cultural grooming, and the educational prepping that we have been subjected to for decades in preparation to making us accept a post-human future. It takes a lot of physical and psychological abuse to get an intelligent species like ours to agree to its own extinction. Most, if not all, that has transcended in the last 60 years was designed to get us closer to accepting such a dystopian reality. Whether you care to accept it or not, we live in a hyper-controlled matrix where our perception of reality is meticulously planned, managed, and executed in order to control and steer us in whichever direction they wish. And the direction is a post-human world. For this, they first needed to destabilize, dehumanize, and demoralize humanity through every means possible. The destruction of the nuclear family, children being indoctrinated by the state, abortion, the eradication of God and spirituality from education, life in mega cities and away from nature, toxic food, air and water, social media, replacing real human connection and interaction, engineered financial crisis and taxation, endless wars and massive migration, stress, anxiety, depression, drugs and alcohol, constant fear-mongering, moral relativism as the new religion, and I could go on and on about how humanity has been influenced and forced to move away from all the things that give us strength, security, purpose, and meaning. A weak, immoral, disconnected, ignorant, and unhealthy population is an easy target for the next stage, the creation of an entire generation of androgynous beings. Masculinity is under attack psychologically, culturally, and biologically. Women are being replaced in sports, entertainment, and politics by men pretending to be women. And children are being indoctrinated at school to think that gender is a choice. The transgender movement is not a grassroots movement. It comes from the top. It has nothing to do with people's freedom of expression, sexuality, or civil rights. It's an evil psyop with a clear agenda to get us closer to transhumanism by making us question the most fundamental notion of human identity, our gender. If you don't know who you are, if you already identify as a hybrid between a man and a woman, you will be easily convinced to become a hybrid between human and machine. Gender ideology is the 2 + 2 = 5 from George Orwell's 1984 dystopian novel. It's the final test to see whether we will follow the most absurd party line towards our own extinction. But 2 + 2 = 4. And no matter how you choose to dress, call yourself, or change your physique, will not change that. The sad reality, though, is that in the gaslighting process to get us closer to a post-human future, they have mentally and physically harmed an increasing number of children and young people. And it's only getting worse. This must be stopped.
So that was a speech given at the Better Way Conference 2023, which also featured some other speakers, some people I've interviewed. For example, Ramiro Romani, who is the de-Googled phone provider, abovephone.com. And we've also got Derek Brose and many others, by the way, some really great speakers there. And it was put together, I think, by Neil Oliver. But anyway, that there's a really powerful speech that just absolutely nails it. And yet the vast majority of the people out there have no idea what's happening. They have no idea the history that they are suffering through and how much of it is controlled and how they have been targeted for extermination. Most people don't know that. And so they think that all these bad events are just, you know, spontaneous, random. Oh, isn't it horrible? What happened on October 7th? What happened on October 7th was only possible because of Israel itself and the support of the United States and the intelligence services. You are living in a theater, a global theater, a theater for your mind. I mean, yes, the suffering is real. The deaths are real. The terrorism is real. But it's all designed to enslave you, to trap you in a system where you consent to giving up your body, mind, and soul, which is the topic here today. They need your consent. They can't just jab you without your consent. People would resist. People would run away. They would fight back. They have to get you to consent to being injected with a biological weapon. Similarly, they have to get you to consent to losing your mind or to losing your emotional control. I mean, yeah, they can play propaganda for you, but you have to take part in that. They have to get your consent. And they also have to get your consent to sacrifice your soul. And when they've done that, they win. They win and they have you. And by the way, who is they? It's not just the globalists. It's demonic. In fact, part of what you're actually witnessing here, and I was going to title today's episode with the following title, but I changed it. I upgraded it. But I was going to say that planet Earth is a giant satanic sacrifice ritual playing out in real time. Everywhere you look, it's satanic sacrifice. Even the bombing of Gaza, this is a satanic sacrifice being carried out by the demons that control Israel right now, the demon Zionists, who, by the way, do not represent the Jewish people. They do not represent Judaism. They represent this elite demonic Zionism front that is all about slaughter and murder and suffering and death and demonism. That's what they stand for. But there's also demonic ritual killing in the abortion centers across America. There's the demonic ritualistic child mutilations in the surgical centers and hospitals that are pushing the LGBT agenda all across America and in some European countries as well. And there are many other examples of this. But the bottom line is you're watching a giant satanic or demonic sacrifice ritual. That's part of what war entails. There's a certain amount of blood that the powers that be want spilled on our planet. They need a certain amount of suffering and terror and pain in order to empower themselves. Our planet is captured under the domain of the fallen angel. And in this current domain, evil reigns. Evil is in charge, in case you haven't noticed. But that's why it's a test. If God were already in charge and everything was, you know, like fluffy clouds and golden harps and whatever, then it wouldn't be a test. It wouldn't be a challenge. You're being subjected to the test for your body, mind, and soul through this mechanism, precisely because it is difficult, because then it means something. If you can endure this, if you can reject the vaccine propaganda and reject the psyops from the media and reject the emotional hijacking and reject the calls to abandon your ethics, that means something. You have passed the test. You have accomplished something that 99 out of 100 people cannot accomplish. So feel good about that. If you still are in control of your mind, your spirit, your emotions, and you recognize that you are a divine being and that other human beings are also created in the same divinity, then you pass the test. And by the way, when you truly understand that point, when you truly understand that the child in Gaza or the IDF soldier in Israel or the black homeless man on the streets of San Francisco or whoever, when you understand that they and you are all the same, you are all part of the same cosmic soul from God. God granted you your individuality for this life experience, but you are all part of the same cosmic connectedness. Once you understand that, then you can't possibly bomb somebody else, because to harm them is to harm yourself. To cause suffering to them is to cause suffering to yourself. There is no them, actually. It's not us versus them. It's all us. We are of the same spirit. We are all children of the same God, even among those who don't recognize God, by the way. They are still children of God, whether they see it or not. And this is the highest level of understanding of what it is to be human, that during this test, we have our individuated experiences. But after this test, after this life, when we pass on, we find out that we're all from the same divine spirit of God. And we are not separate. Separation is an illusion. And tribalism is rooted in separation. Tribalism is an illusion. And so when you see people out there marching for Palestine or marching for Israel or marching for black people or marching for white people or marching for whatever tribe, they're living in illusion. They've deceived themselves into thinking that they're different. There's no difference. We're all the same. And this divine principle is enshrined in the United States Constitution. We are all created equal. All men are created equal, and it means all people, not just men. We are all created equal. We are all equal in the eyes of God. And in fact, when you look at the division and the genocide and the horrors of war, it comes usually from when one group of people thinks that they are superior to some other group of people, and they forget that they're all equal, and they think they're elite. And that's Zionism, by the way. And that's also, you know, white supremacism, or black supremacism, for that matter, or Chinese supremacism, for that matter. Any kind of supremacism is deception, thinking that one group is better than another group, that one tribe is above all other tribes. And of course, the Zionist tribe is one of the most deluded of all because they think that God gave them permission to exterminate other tribes, which of course is not something that God does. So no, that's illusion, that's deception, and that's genocide. And if you think that God told you to go murder a bunch of other people, that's not the voice of God, Netanyahu. That's the voice of Satan whispering in your ear. Netanyahu is an agent of Satan, not of God. And just to lighten up this podcast before we go to today's interview, which is with Stephen Ben-Nun of Israeli News Live, let me share with you this true story. There was an historic all-female spacewalk crew, because NASA wanted to have a bunch of women walking in space for whatever reason. I guess it's just the latest virtue signaling from NASA. And the news is that they accidentally dropped a tool bag into orbit. So there you go. The all-female spacewalk crew dropped a tool bag into orbit. But then again, the all-male spacewalk crew refused to ask for directions, even though they were lost. So I guess it can work both ways. There you go. All right, we're going to jump into the interview with Israeli News Live. Real quick, credit to our sponsor, BeReady123.com is the website. And of course, they offer solar generators with packages of solar panels, the battery systems, the lithium systems, onboard charge controllers and inverters. They allow you to have power when the power grid goes down. And they have a lot of different sizes available, including some pretty large ones, by the way, that can power even blenders and, in some cases, small freezers as well. So check it out at BeReady123.com because things are going to get interesting. Oh, you know what? I forgot to mention the false flags. So I can't believe I forgot this. What's coming in America and in the Middle East? Look, the entire U.S. Navy is not there just, you know, for kicks. I shouldn't say the entire U.S. Navy, but a significant percentage of the U.S. Navy is there in the Middle East. And they are there because the plan is to provoke Iran and perhaps Turkey and perhaps Lebanon or Hezbollah into attacking Israel. And so far, those countries have said no, they haven't taken the bait. But if they cannot be provoked, there will very likely be a false flag incident carried out by the U.S. military against itself. And this has also been stated by Paul Craig Roberts, in a recent interview. And we're reaching out to Paul Craig Roberts, by the way, who served in the Reagan administration, and he's a very, very smart man. He's got a lot of wisdom and experience in this realm of geopolitics. We're going to invite him on for an interview as well. But he laid out this theory, and I agree with it, that the U.S. military will carry out a false flag against itself, which means there will be a U.S. Navy vessel that will likely be, you know, hit with a bomb, maybe an onboard bomb, and they will blame it on Hezbollah. And maybe the vessel sinks, and, you know, 100 sailors are killed. Well, then, it'll be like America's Pearl Harbor once again, or America's 9/11 once again. Oh, we have to go to war. They killed 100 sailors. They sank a ship. And you're going to see this all over the media, and then all the typical Americans are going to be all whipped up into emotional hijacking. Yeah, yeah, let's go get them. We got to get those Hezbollahs. Those Hezbollahs have got to get killed. And this is what you're going to see. Yeah, America, F yeah, you know. Remember that movie? It's going to be all America bomb the crap out of Lebanon, you know, or Iran. Probably just bomb Iran, even though Iran had nothing to do with it. But this is coming. Make no mistake, this is coming. And it's going to take a lot of courage to resist that, to call for peace when 90% of the country is like, you know, their heads are exploding from anger and rage. They're like, kill them all, you know, and you're going to be the one person out there saying, let's not kill everybody. You're like, you're not American. Yeah, you must hate America. You know, this is what's going to happen. You must be with that Putin guy. It's like, what's Putin got to do with this? Doesn't matter. You're with Putin. Sorry about my impressions here. But now, at the same time that that is happening, you're very likely going to see a number of terrorism attacks in the United States. And who was it that I was interviewing on this topic who said that, yeah, the FBI, this was Jeffrey Prather. He said the FBI is running around right now recruiting, Muslim extremists all across America, recruiting them to carry out, you know, bombings and whatever. Bombings of probably bridges and refineries and railroad tracks or whatever. And there's probably going to be a large multi-city attack across America, probably coordinated, to be blamed on, you know, Hezbollah or Iran or both. And this might coincide with an attack on the U.S. Navy vessels or the false flag attack so that America can play the victim. Oh, we've been shot at, you know, Hamas is they're getting us, they're killing us. Even though it's all going to be fabricated, and then that will be the justification for launching World War III. So be prepared for that, folks. Be prepared. This test is not over. The test for your body, mind, and soul is not over by a long shot. There's a lot more coming, and it's going to get a lot more difficult. So be prepared and have your wits about you. All right, with that said, we're going to jump into the interview with Stephen Ben-Noon from Israeli Live News. I think I said Israeli News Live earlier. Sorry. Apologies. Israeli Live News. In any case, it's a fascinating interview, so enjoy this. You'll learn a lot, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Take care. Welcome to today's interview on Brighttown.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighttown, and today we're going to delve into events in the Middle East. And I think our guest today is ideally suited to bring you that information. It's Stephen Ben-Noon from Israeli News Live, and the website is israelinewslive.org if you want to check out that site. And that's also the name of his channels on other platforms, video platforms as well. So welcome, Stephen. This is the first time we've been able to speak together here, and it's an honor to have you on.
Thank you, Mike. It's a great pleasure, and it is an honor for us as well, because we've been a fan of your work, my wife, Yana, as well, for many, many years. So to get to come on and share some of our views with you is truly a pleasure.
Well, likewise, I've been a fan of a lot of your work. I've seen many of your videos and interviews over the years, and I really appreciate what you're doing and your thoughtfulness. And you, especially being Israeli News Live, suddenly the relevance of your area of specialty your area of focus over these many years is really coming to light. And, you know, it's very difficult for people who maybe have not known anything really about Israel for many years now to dive into the situation and try to make sense because of the complexity, right, of, you know, Judaism and Zionism. What is a Jew technically in different backgrounds, different types of Jews, and, you know, all the different warring factions and so on. But I'm going to turn it over to you in a second, but let's start with, if you could, the events of October 7th. What do you make of those events? And was the IDF actually tactically defeated, or was it allowed to happen?
Mike, it is, first off, let me say, especially in defense of all the families in Israel that lost loved ones as a result of what Hamas was able to achieve on October the 7th, it was the greatest tragedy in a one-day event in Israel's history ever. And that's what's galvanized the country. It's what's brought them together. Although I have some very serious concerns about the way this has been headed, nonetheless, it galvanized the country, brought them together. But at the same time, almost immediately, one of the first things that I noticed when this all happened was that 6 to 8 hour gap, Hamas, not to mention Hamas makes it in past the security fence in Israel totally undetected. Mike, I lived in Israel twice in my life. Back during the Intifada during 2004, I was in Israel constantly between 2004 and 2006. I have gone through a suicide bombing on September 22nd, 2004. So I know firsthand how rapid the Israeli military, police, and ambulance services are in the wake of any kind of tragedy you could ever imagine. And during the Intifada, that was hands down. You always saw that. The military's response time is unbelievable. Not to mention the other thing that I began to look at when I was already getting information from Israelis that I know that live there. They were sending me information about, gosh, Steve, this is nuts. You know, we're talking anywhere from 6 to 8 hours, including I was getting information from former IDF members as well, for the military to respond. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, last time I lived in Israel, I lived in Jerusalem. There's not any point in the country that you can't get to from Jerusalem that you're not there within anywhere from 2 to 2.5 hours, even a lot, all the way down to a lot, 2.5 hours. So what takes the military, especially with the military base right there, you know, we got little outpost military bases everywhere in Israel to begin with, and then the military suddenly can't respond. That began to become a real tragedy for me to even fathom. I mean, yeah. You know, it's one thing to know Hamas has made this attack, and we have the figures from Israel, approximately 1,400 people were killed, over 200 were taken hostages, and then nobody responds. I got one IDF guy that sent me a breakdown in it. He was actually assigned to the regiment that was overrun. They were practically all killed in their beds. And he spoke, he wrote me a detailed description of things that he knew about. And in particular, Mike, one of the biggest ones that hit me was Sderot. Sderot is a little community. It's only like about a mile or so from the fence of the northern Gaza border. And that community there, he said that always it was protected by the military, by military presence, always. And that is, that's very common in Israel. When you're anywhere near, especially if you're in the West Bank or if you're along the Gaza border fence. I used to work at a kibbutzim, which is on the northern side of the Gaza border. So I understand this very well. But when you're there, the military has their forces there, and they're guarding all these little small communities. Well, suddenly, a few months before this operation happens, he explains that, he doesn't explain this, another former IDF military commander said that they began to pull away, they pulled away the Israeli military presence, and they replaced them with a private security group. And then they decided to pull them away and have only the residents protect their own communities. And then on top of that, they pulled away, Mike, because every one of these communities have their own a little armory there in the event something like this were to happen, to where the citizens have the ability to have a heavier firepower, et cetera, to be able to get to it at the local armory of their community. Then the military goes in there and pulls all the armories out of all these settlements along the Gaza border.
Wow.
And then suddenly, then you top that off with reports coming out that 60 to 80% of the troops were removed from the Gaza border and taken to the West Bank for another possible scenario that they were dealing with. That's unheard of in Israel.
So all of these things point to, you believe, a deliberate stand down of sorts?
Well, Mike, I worked with the CIA back in the 80s. And of course, nothing related to the Middle East or anything like that. I was young. I did some pretty crazy things back then. But I left in 1991. And then later along the line, we had, some of the old colleagues that I had contacted me. We had talked about things that were going on in the Middle East. So I got more, especially with me being in the news here, independent media there, trying to bring out things that were happening around the world, Middle East, Russia, et cetera, through some of the contacts that I still had through the intelligence community. And one of those individuals contacted me. I reported it on my channel 11 months ago now. It's been 11 months ago now. I knew about it about a year ago. And he said to me, we were talking about the Russian-Ukrainian war, and I was asking him point blank, because we were already talking about there was, according to the Joint Chiefs, there was a great concern based on the computer war game scenario that Russia may do a nuclear strike on Germany either at the end of this year or going into next year. That's just what the simulations show as a potential. I said, so I guess that's going to bring about World War III. He said, no. He said, what's going to bring about World War III is an event that's going to transpire in the Middle East. I said, what event's going to transpire in the Middle East? He said, I'm not at liberty to discuss that, but I can tell you, you're going to see an event transpire in the Middle East that is going to be so grave that when you do see it, you will know this is going to cause World War III.
And that became October 7th.
And yes, that became October 7th there. So, and that's the sad part of it. So I actually had some foreknowledge. I just didn't know what was coming.
Right.
And then, of course, then there's been more and more testimony that has come out. I'm very cautious, Mike, about when they first come out with information like the Israeli helicopter gunman firing at the festival there, killing their own, et cetera. Because you don't know what's going to be propaganda, what's not, et cetera. But I do know that when it came down to where not all of Hamas had gotten back inside of Gaza before the IDF finally does show up, but when they did, Israel has what they call the Hannibal Doctrine. Right. The Hannibal Doctrine is if you're going to be taken as a hostage, they're going to take you out as well.
You're talking about Israel. Israel's willingness to take out its own citizens.
Right. And I'm quite, I have to say, I mean, you know, living there, if I was being kidnapped by Hamas, I would rather them do that as well. So I'm not, I can't say that I'm against that. But the sad thing is when it was being reported to the media and they're showing these houses all completely burned out and charred bodies on the ground and stuff like that, that wasn't from what Hamas was carrying. In fact, I had a video I just did recently, Mike, that in that video, I'm watching the guy as he's running up to one of the concrete barrier walls that they were able to explode and move out of the way. And the guy's speaking in English. He switches back to Arabic, but I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And the IDF guy that sent me the breakdown, he actually does speak about in what he wrote to me that there were those that were clearly not Arabic that were a part of this. Now, he doesn't send me any of the footage or anything, but he does say that, you know, that there were definitely, as he looked at it as being European, possibly descent type fighters in amongst Hamas. He brought out how that they were very well armed, they're very well trained. And that's the other thing, Mike. I mean, we've got Israel's got drone surveillance on that whole entire border. You've got guards that are in the lookout towers there. You've got the fences electrified. The fence has all kinds of sensors. They've got sensors in the ground. Even if you're coming through the tunnels, they would know you're coming. You know, you got tanks all along that border. And if anything touches the fence, and this is what some of the former IDF people that have spoken out about this have said, you know, if a mouse touched the fence or a cat, you got 20 Jeeps there. Even Rabbi Mizrahi out of New York, who is an Israeli-born rabbi, he was stating himself when this first happened. He said, I contacted some of the people that were former intelligence in Israel, and they said, there's no way this could have happened. He said, it's an inside job. But he like Avi Lipkin, which Avi Lipkin's a good friend of mine, both believe that it was the left that did it intentionally. Avi Lipkin, his wife worked Egyptian intelligence years ago, and he said that, you know, the Egyptians had warned Israel a week in advance that it was an imminent attack coming from Hamas. They were going to invade, and then still nobody gets the message. So something just, I mean, that just is the first issue that just did not sit well at all.
Yeah, there are a lot of contradictions and also testimonies from some people. Now, what do you make of this Israeli helicopter gunship video footage? You kind of mentioned it earlier. I haven't personally reported on it yet because we never know where this footage comes from, right? It could be footage from, you know, Afghanistan that's just been repurposed by you know, pro-Hamas forces or something. But then again, I've also seen flyover drone footage of all of the civilian vehicles from that desert rave party, whatever, that the festival party in Israel. And it looks to me, it's pretty clear that you can't damage vehicles like that just with rifles. I mean, they have been blown up. They've been struck by something much larger.
That's the only thing that really, to me, gives a lot of credibility. And I've watched the same footage that you have as well, Mike. I've seen the burnt out vehicles. You see a lot of the footage where they're showing, even on the Israeli news side, that these vehicles were people were charred inside the vehicle.
Right.
You know, maybe an RPG, you know, does have a momentum to do that. But the problem is there's just so many of them. And so you look at the helicopter footage, and then you can't help but wonder if there may not be some truth to this. There have been a couple of interviews on Israeli media where the survivors have actually talked about events like this. I haven't heard anyone on the helicopter incident, but there's even one particular interview that I saw where the Israeli that was laying in the hospital, he said, I nearly died. He was at the festival. He lost so much blood. And the reporter asked him, he says, how do you feel about all this? He said, I'm angry. And he says, at who? He said, Hamas. He said, no. He said, at our own military. He says, where was the military? Why did I lay there for 6 hours dying and the military never showed up?
Wow.
And then, of course, the silencing of Israelis has become a major, major push. That's going on. I was even getting information from people inside Mossad where they were saying that in coded language they're speaking amongst themselves, and they're saying this is definitely an inside job. And this is not, these are not Mossad people that are pro-Hamas by no means. In fact, these are some of the people that are actually in applauding the Israeli government for totally annihilating every Palestinian in the West Bank. They just flat out hate them. And you know, Mike, look, I was a pro-Zionist for many, many years because of being Jewish, living in Israel, you know, going through the Intifada. You know, I had a lot of that feeling as well. But I think when I went through that first suicide bombing, that's what really woke me up to say, you know, because it was an 18-year-old girl that blew herself up. And I'm thinking to myself, why would an 18-year-old girl blow herself up?
Yeah,
it makes no sense. But then the house that I lived in Jerusalem there, I had a room that was rented out to a guy that had been injured in the military, and his name was Iran, and we were very close friends. And I remember him telling me one day about target practicing on Palestinians. You know, like I said, this is back in 2004. So he was doing it, I would have to say, around 2003, 2002, because he was a young guy. And I said, target practicing on Palestinians? Are you serious? And I said, what, did you kill him or what? He said, of course. And I said, and that's okay. He says, well, it sharpens our skills. And I'm like, I couldn't believe I was hearing this. And wow. So this is what began to make me realize there's another side of the story that I'm not looking at. And there's something that I'm missing as well. And especially when you have, you know, most of my family members were distant family members that went through the Holocaust because my grandparents came over right before the Holocaust happened in Germany. So I'm sitting here watching all this, listening to what's being said there. And I'm thinking to myself, how could you come out of Europe, out of the Holocaust, and then suddenly decide to oppress the people that are in the land? Because that's inevitably what it ended up being, is that we ended up doing to the Palestinians what was being done to our families in Europe. Right. Now, granted, not all Israelis feel this way at all. There's a lot of Israelis that are just totally the opposite. But it seems to have spurred more so since Netanyahu formed the coalition of people like Ben-Gvir, Smotrich, Ben-Gvir being a very strong Kahani supporter. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kahani's name, but he's the right-wing American Jew that was, he was in Israeli politics that was ended up by Israeli government determined to be leading a terrorist organization. And now his name has become synonymous in Israel as a very pro right-wing government ideology. And sadly, and of course, I see a lot of division there because those people that are protesting what's going on in Gaza right now, me more specifically, Mike, is these children. I mean, I have to just tell you, that's killing my heart.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's also killing, I think, Israel's reputation on the world stage. I mean, that's what we're watching, I think, right now, but you correct me if I'm wrong, is a bullheaded Netanyahu with Yoav Gallant and others who are just charging head first into really kind of a suicide mission. I mean, yeah, they can defeat kinetically Hamas. You know, they control northern Gaza. They can blow up the tunnels. They can do all that. But at what cost to Israel's future relationships, economic opportunities? I mean, Israel depends on oil that's transited through Turkey, for example, and Turkey, the people of Turkey hate Israel right now, even if Erdogan is sort of taking a middle road at the moment. But, you know, how much damage is Israel doing to its reputation in your view right now? And what would be the implications of that for Israel as a nation, especially if Israel continues this ethnic cleansing, you got to call it that, of Gaza?
I agree. It is an ethnic cleansing. And what my biggest concern is on this here, Mike, is that I lived in Prague for 4 years. My wife is from the former Czechoslovakia, so we lived there for 4 years. And it was during the time of the destabilization of Syria, the ISIS came in, which is a totally another can of worms to begin with. But we saw this mass migration, and this will answer the question you're talking about or asking about. We saw this mass migration of Arabic people coming in on foot, coming across Turkey into Europe, but they mostly went to Western Europe. And I thought that was kind of odd at the time. Of course, I traveled all over Europe by car and stuff, by train, et cetera. And we were seeing all the camps in France and Germany and the Netherlands and over in England, et cetera, and all the way down into Italy. And I said then on several reports, I said, this is a setup. And it's going to be a setup when they get ready to pull off their one world government. This will be their setup to pull off that event. I said, and I don't know how they're going to do it or why or whatever. I said, but somewhere along the line, they're going to use these Arabic people that are here to create something that's going to cause some kind of mass killing. And I don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to cause it. Now, I say that, though, Mike, and here's the reason why I say it. When this event happened and then I realized this was a staged event, as Netanyahu said, this is our 9/11. Well, hello. I mean, anybody ought to figure that one out by his very comparison.
Right.
But then he takes And he goes in there and he starts relentlessly bombing the entire Gaza Strip. Granted, they say they're going after Hamas targets. But like you point out, at what cost? Is this going to harm Israel's reputation? Well, in a way, yes, it does harm Israel's reputation. But if you can take and just keep going, and when you see that there's this relentless attack, and then I realized Israel, or not Israel, and I really want to clarify that, this is not the Israeli people. Whoever's in power, whoever's pulling the strings and behind the scene, they want, and my, this is my view on this, a conjecture, so I don't say this is 100% right, but from what I'm seeing, they want the bloodshed to be so great to where those people that got displaced 6-7 years ago from ISIS will then begin to start taking out their anger, vengeance on other Jewish communities, and maybe even pro-Zionist Christians. Whoever is for Israel, whoever's supporting Israel, they'll begin to take out their frustrations on them. And then what's that going to cause?
Escalation.
Yes, and it will also cause a martial law on, almost on a global scale. Even the United States on our southern border, some guy put up a video there. I saw it there. They had these tents and stuff there, and they were processing illegal immigrants coming in. And I'm looking at the pictures of the guys, right? You had African people in there, you had people from India in there, and you had Arabic people. And I'm going like, are you serious? I mean, how in the world, how did they get suddenly to Mexico? Where are the Mexicans coming across the southern border?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of Middle Eastern people that are coming across as illegals into the United States. Yeah.
So with that being stated, it reminds me, there's a book called Holocaust Victims Accused. It's out of print. The Israelis do not want nobody knowing about the book. It's written by Rabbi Schoenfeld. And these were rabbis that contributed to the book when they came out of the Holocaust. They were really coming heavily against the Jewish or the Jewish Federation, Jewish organizations that were in Switzerland and in the United States. And in front of a trial, Rabbi Schoenfeld actually brings out that when they were doing the trials about those that were complicit of what they consider to be war crimes, is that the Jewish Congress of Switzerland, when they had negotiated the release of 850,000 Jews to be able to go to then what would be called Palestine for $15 a head, the Jewish Congress refused to pay for it. And instead, later, they negotiated a deal with the Germans only to release 1,500, and they were willing to pay over $1,000 a head for that 1,500, and the total almost ended up the same amount, and they could have got the whole lot.
Wow.
Instead of sending them to Auschwitz. Now, when that was, and this is recorded trial record, you can look it up for yourself, they asked him, or the Jewish Congress leader at the time, they asked him, why did you do this? He said, because we needed Jewish blood in order to be able to have to be able to justify the state of Israel and sit at the repartitioning of the Middle East for us to get a state.
Wow. I mean, hold on. Let me comment. What you're saying there is that the ethnic cleansing that's being targeted to the Palestinian people today is partially the result of a series of events that began with European guilt against the Jews, because some people in power, like you just said, allowed Jewish citizens to be slaughtered, to create the blood, to create the guilt, to create the justification for essentially the Nakba. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's very similar. What they're doing is they want to take out as many Palestinians as they can so that the Arabic nations, it's almost like this, Mike. I mean, I'm a Christian. I'm a firm believer in Jesus Christ. One of the first ones in my family to believe that Jesus was the Messiah. And what I'm watching is that if Israel doesn't believe, naturally, they don't believe that Jesus is the Messiah. But if they're going to try to bring about a Messiah of their own, they feel like certain events have to transpire biblically.
Right.
And so therefore, they figure they have to have a Gog of Magog war. So they got to have all these Arabic nations coming against them. And if they're not doing it, then we got to create the way for them to do it. Secondly, if it took the Jewish blood of 850,000 Hungarian Jews for them to get a Jewish state, then they want more Jewish blood out there in order to be able to be the head of a new world order. Because according to what they believe, and this is your Talmudic Judaism. More so, the Chabad organization is behind this. And I used to be part of the Chabad organization, so I'm very familiar with them. But what they want is if they can get the world to turn against Israel, then in the mind of Christians that have been taught around the world that all the nations or everybody are going to come against the Jewish people, then they actually achieve something. Because the mindset already is that everybody's supposed to come against Israel, and then you're going to forget the fact that they just killed, you know, however many thousands of children and men and women in Gaza. That's going to go by the wayside, because when everybody begins to attack, when all these Muslims that they displaced 6 years ago, which they hope you don't remember that part,
right?
They begin to start killing Jews. They start killing Zionist Christians because of their views. And I'm not in support of any of this at all. That's right. My whole point. I'm against it. But they're going to do that. And then the world's sympathy is going to look away from what's happening in Gaza. And they're going to say, oh, my gosh, look at what's happening to the Jewish people around the world.
Wow. So you're talking about, if I could describe this as an eschatological accelerationist strategy.
I do believe that. And it kind of goes back to this Sabbatai Levi doctrine. They believe that the more sinful things are done, the sooner the Messiah will come.
Wow.
There's actually a book, what is that book called? Yeah, it's actually called, it's by Robert Sipper. It's called 1666, Redemption Through Sin. Most of these are written by Israelis to begin with. And he, along with Barry Chamish, a good friend of mine, he passed away, that did the book on Who Killed Yitzhak Rabin.
I've got to ask this though. And, you know, pardon me for this. I mean, I'm a Christian as well as you are a Christian, but if you have to sacrifice all kinds of human blood to get your Messiah to show up, what kind of Messiah is that? You know what I mean? I mean, why do you have to kill so many people? That sounds like a sacrifice, a human sacrifice ritual to me.
It really comes right back down to it. I mean, that goes back into the whole Moloch doctrine, where Israel was sacrificing their children on the altar to Moloch.
Exactly.
And look at what Benjamin Netanyahu is doing as he's crying out, you know, what does he say, that, you know, they're dealing with Amalek. And, you know, but what is he basically saying?
He's saying,
you go back to the biblical times, it's kill every man, woman, and child. He's justifying.
Right.
The slaughter of these families. And when you go back and look at history, I mean, it's just like when I tell people, I say, look, you know, if you think that Gaza, for example, is like, you know, because we have Zephaniah, Zechariah's prophecies about, you know, the sins of Gaza, they're basically going to be wiped out, et cetera, the Philistines there, you know. Well, that was during a biblical time, and it was fulfilled already, because when you begin to look at modern day Gaza compared to the Gaza of the biblical times, which when you read those prophecies include Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, that's all the way up to Tel Aviv. Well, I hate to say it, but the Palestinians don't occupy any of those lands any longer. Uh-huh. They've been pushed into that little bitty envelope.
Right.
And many of them are Christians on top of it. And
good
that's
point.
What gets me.
Okay, so what you're pointing to here, and by the way, thank you for all your analysis and observations here. This is really critical for people to understand. But what you're pointing at here is a desire for escalation and a desire to get Israel attacked by Arabic nations and perhaps Iran on top of that. And perhaps then this explains why Israel is seemingly wanting to carry out atrocities such as bombing hospitals over and over again, because it's designed to provoke. Does that seem consistent with what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Well, they certainly are provoking. I mean, if they keep this up, it's like a tidal wave of angry Arabs surrounding Israel, right? You know, Turkey, even in Jordan, some in Egypt as well, not to mention Hezbollah and Lebanon and all the way to Iran and Iraq and so on. But it's an ocean of Arabs that want to see Israel destroyed. And if Israel doesn't stop what it's doing, I think they're going to unleash that tidal wave. Maybe that's their plan.
That is the plan. And of course, you got to remember the Samson option that Israel holds as well. Israel, though, is not going to necessarily, everybody thinks Israel will use nuclear weapons. Israel has antimatter weapons. They have, some type of a kinetic energy weapon that they have as well. They can begin to wipe out all the different regions around them without ever having to use a nuclear bomb, but really? Have just as much success as a nuclear bomb.
No kidding.
And two, it's just like with Damascus. We know that Isaiah speaks about Damascus becoming a ruinous heap, but people never read down the rest of the chapter when it actually talks about the ones that would plant the unpleasant plants. It's actually in Hebrew, it's more like they created a group to go in there and destabilize the country. And then you see that where God accuses those that, he says, you've forgotten the God of your salvation, being the Jews, and he said, you're not mindful of your rock. That's the Christians. And Damascus, it says, was a fortress for Ephraim. Ephraim, in this case here, were those descendants of the house of Israel that had believed the message of Jesus. Remember when Jesus, when it says that the Syrians all came to him and he healed every one of them. And one of the first Christian churches was in Damascus. And it's been there ever since 2,000 years ago. And now it's been nearly obliterated when ISIS came through. They're still hanging in there, but they're going to destroy Damascus. And of course, Israel is wanting to take all the way from the Egyptian River all the way over to the Euphrates. And so that's all part of their plan. And it also plays in with the Silk Road Initiative. People think that, oh, China hates Israel. China doesn't hate Israel. China and Israel have been working together for many, many years. That's why they moved all of our manufacturing jobs to China years ago, is because those that control the wealth in our country knew good and well that we would be expired, wore out, used up. And so they started moving all the main manufacturing jobs to China. Xi Jinping was never the mastermind. It was a Hungarian Jew that was the mastermind of the Silk Road Initiative. And I remember one time when the Chinese were building the port in Haifa, and there was no bidding other than China on this. And I made such a big to-do about it. So then they made them bid for the port of Ashkelon, but China still got it. And then I get a message from Israel. They said, you need to keep your mouth shut about China.
Wow.
And I'm like, why? They said, they will be our next military superpower when things change up.
Well, certainly current events are confirming what you're saying right there. The United States is unable to manufacture sufficient munitions, for example, to even fight the proxy war against Russia in Ukraine, not to mention having to fight a war in the Middle East. You know, the U.S. weapon systems are in many cases decades behind even Russia with its hypersonic missiles, its anti-air defense systems, and even, you know, Russian munitions output is many times higher than the combined West. And also, you know, think about this, how the West has been devastated, Western Europe in particular, by the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline, and what that has done to the price of energy and the shutdown of industry in Germany and France and other countries as well. You know, it's not hard to look at this and conclude that the West is a power that is waning in the world. What's your take on that?
I agree, Mike, it is. And this is something, you know, you have to remember, those that are in power in behind the scenes, they know good and well that things are going to change. They plan these things decades in advance. So our demise was planned long ago. Now, it's not to say that Americans cannot overcome that. I believe that, you know, we can, you know, with faith, we can believe and overcome anything. But the thing is, you're going to have to, the American population has really got to get woken up to what's really going on. And rather than infighting, I mean, I kind of go back and I think about Jesus's words in Matthew 24, when he says kingdom will rise, you know, he says nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And that kingdom is actually not what most people think. It's the Pharisaic kingdom trying to regain power again, when the Christian was the kingdom that was, you know, because Jesus said he would take the kingdom away from the Pharisees and give it over to a nation producing fruit. So we're really at that time juncture right now where the two kingdoms are battling, you know, because the Pharisees have come back. They want control. They want to dominate the entire world again. But yet the Christians are like, it's supposed to be peace and harmony, not killing each other. So we're in for a rough road ahead. And then on top of it, then you've got Biden, who made an agreement with the Chinese that if we ever if we end up with any kind of unrest in our country here, that they would be the ones allowed in to be UN peacekeepers, because after all, the Chinese own so much of American assets here that they should have a right to be able to do so. And then Justin Trudeau with all the Chinese troops on our northern border. They don't really want to fire a shot, but they do want to destabilize this country so badly that they will be able to justify disarming the nation. And that's one reason why communism slipped into our colleges and universities in this country as well, because that's part of the Lenin doctrine. That's, if you want to control the country, you put them under communism.
Well, yeah, exactly. And part of that also is cultural destruction, as you know. Yes. And I think I want to show you an image, a great example of that. Now, an IDF soldier in Gaza, after, you know, the bombing and the attacking campaign, then unfurling an LGBT flag. And here it is from informationliberation.com. There's a soldier, LGBT flag, that says, in the name of love. It's like, okay, we bomb you, we kill your children, you know, 11,000 plus civilians, we destroy major universities, hospitals, and so on. And then we come in and say, in the name of love, we are conquering you for transgenderism. It's almost like, first we bomb your children, and the ones who still survive, we want them to be mutilated with transgenderism. I mean, there are so many levels of, I would call it, demonic cruelty in this in particular. But what kind of reaction do you have from seeing an LGBT flag in an Israeli soldier's hands in Gaza?
You know, think about it, Mike. It goes right back to the Sabbatean Frankist doctrine, that they believe that through sin, through breaking of all the commandments, then that will bring the Mashiach. So they want to go. In fact, Sabbatai Levi actually promoted, orgies and everything else. They figured the worse things get, the greater chance they have for the Messiah to come back. And so that's why Israel promotes one of the largest gay communities in the world. In fact, Netanyahu, I remember this years ago, Netanyahu requested the gay community come to a gay pride march in Jerusalem. And they said, no way. You got the whole Haredi community live in Jerusalem. We're not coming up there. These people will kill us if we come up there. And he guaranteed the support and protection of the gay community to do so. And, you know, and so what they did is, when they came up there and they did their march, over on a street called Hanavim, which means the street of the prophets, the sewer lid busted open, a raw sewer just went down the streets. And I remember a good friend of mine, Simon Tov, said to me, he says, well, we know now what God thinks about this particular march, right, and them just allowing it to happen. So, yeah, they've just really stooped about as low as you can possibly go in permitting these things.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, but it's a reminder that this is between nations. It's not just a war over territory or resources. It's a war over cultural ideas. And the ideas, like you just mentioned, in Tel Aviv, you know, the gay capital of the Middle East, in essence, and then in America, like New York City, the abortion capital of America, increasingly Western nations have rejected God, rejected Christ's teachings. They mutilate children and celebrate it. They sacrifice children, and then they claim they want the Messiah to return. Like, are you sure you want the Messiah to come back when your nations are steeped in all of this sin? Because have you read the Old Testament? You know, things don't go well for nations that turned away from God. If Christ returns, it's probably not going to be in your favor right now, given where things are. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. And you know, Mike, one thing that's very interesting when you bring this up here, once they fully get control, once the right-wing government fully gets control, the next thing that we see that is going to roll out, something that my wife, Yana Benun, has really brought out a lot on, is the Noahide Law system. This is something that, if you'll notice, like when the Poway rabbi, that, you know, their synagogue was shot up, he's there before the United Nations. And I mean, my heart went out to them because they got shot up and all this happened to them. But at the same time, it was also the perfect opportunity to bring forth that agenda that, you know, every president has signed since Ronald Reagan, and of course it's growing all over the world as well. And that's what they call the seven Noahide laws. It's a Talmudic set of laws for Gentiles now, mind you. It's not for the Jews. The Jews got the 613, as it's called, mitzvot, which I wonder sometimes where we pulled that number out of the rabbit hat or something, because it's not exactly 613, but nonetheless, you know, and there, and everybody is saying that this is the bedrock of civilization. And the President Bush actually signed it as the bedrock of civilization. Dannemeyer was one of the first congressmen that ever brought this out. Dannemeyer, because he saw that they slipped it through through Congress, and they signed this as Public Law 102-14, I believe it is. But the danger of that is the fact that Christians are going to end up losing their head. Now, I know there was one minister got a little upset with me, and he says, well, you know, he said, Steve's wrong on that. He says, Jews are never going to behead Christians. Well, I agree with him on that. No, they won't, because the Gentiles are the ones that have to set up those courts. And it's interesting, Mike, the 21st degree Mason, if you look at the writing of the 21st degree Mason, he's called a Noahide. And his job is to carry out the capital punishment for anyone that violates the Noahide laws. That's in Freemasonry.
Wow.
Not in Judaism. That's in Freemasonry. And as Rabbi Singer brought out, there's over 100 sub-laws. And normally what gets you in trouble is when you violate, especially for Christians, you violate the blasphemy of God, which they consider, if you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you basically lose your head for it. Now, I actually happen to know the very guy that did the purchase order for a Barack Obama to bring in the guillotines into this country. And he said to get around the Constitution, they subbed out everything. The blades were brought in from one country. The other part of the guillotine was brought in from another country. I think it was three different countries they brought in the things so that nobody would be able to say they were bringing in guillotines into the country. And this is what Jesus was crucified for. When the high priest asked him, are you the Son of God? I adjure you in the name of the living God. Are you the Son of God? And he didn't say he was. He just simply said, thou sayest. He rips his garments and he says, what further need do we have of his blasphemy? And then they had who to put him to death? The Romans. And when they went there, they said, our law says he ought to die. So are we about to see a repeat of history? And will that be in the not so distant future under a new world order? Well, if somebody gets control of the entire globe, or at least they kind of like it was during the times of Rome being the ones ruling the world, but yet the high priest could dictate what those laws were going to be for those that they wanted to be executed. Right. It's getting a little bit scary.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously we've only scratched the surface here. We got to have you back and talk about this in more detail, but we're out of time for today. I want to, first of all, I really appreciate your analysis here and your experience and wisdom in all of this. And secondly, I want to give out your website. IsraeliNewsLive.org is the site, folks. And Stephen, can you tell us which other platforms or channels where people can follow your work?
If you, one that's really a good platform is iconnectfx.com/IsraeliNewsLive, mainly because there we're able to translate into five languages. So like, wow. If I had your program here on right now, they would hear you in Russian, German, Hebrew, Spanish, and French, I believe are the languages that we have on there. So that's very good for that part there. Israeli News Live, YouTube, anything Israeli News Live, Odyssey, Israeli News Live, as well as, and we need to be on Brideon. Everybody's been begging me to come to your platform for a long time. So we've got to make that happen.
Well, you are always welcome on Brideon, and you can just create a channel there or get in touch with me after the show. I can have our top customer support guy help your team get set up if you want to upload there. You're always welcome on Brighteon, but I want to support your work here and give people all the ways to follow you.
Thank you. I appreciate it so very much. And it has been a real pleasure, Mike, being on with you today. I really count it an honor. And to be able to speak openly, that is becoming a very, very...
isn't that true?
It's a treasured thing to be able to speak your heart and not get condemned for it in the process.
Yeah, yeah. You will never be censored on Brighteon. And I didn't censor you today, And even if we disagree on certain subjects, that's okay too. It's about, we've got to have dialogue. We've got to be able to speak about this. And I think that your knowledge in this area is really critical for us to understand, because we are on the verge of some very devastating global events taking place. And there, the people in charge, including in the United States, especially in the US, but I would also include Netanyahu, I think a lot of these people in charge are psychotic lunatics, frankly. That's my opinion.
You're right. And I can't tell you how many people I know that that know these people personally say that there's always, they have something on them. And that's how they keep these politicians in line.
Yep.
That's why you see.
Well, there's Jeffrey Epstein, man. Epstein files.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. So how many would be, how many would be compromised to have that go public?
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt. I mean, that was the, look, we could do a whole show about the Epstein operation, but they've got a lot of files, a lot of video files on a lot of people doing a lot of, no doubt, weird, horrific criminal things to children. And that's what they're hanging over their heads right now. So,
yes,
there you go. All right. We're going to have to wrap it up there for today. Maybe a little bit of a cliffhanger for what's coming next. But thank you so much, Stephen. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, everybody. That's Stephen Ben-Noon at IsraeliNewsLive.org is the website. And thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams here, Brighteon.com, the free speech platform, as you can tell from today's interview. Share this interview anywhere you'd like, including you can repost it on other platforms and just give credit back to Israeli News Live. Thank you for watching today. God bless you all. Take care. Today's interview is brought to you by HealthRangerStore.com. And if you'd like to support us, check out what we have available. Even after our big Black Friday event, which just concluded, and we had an outpouring of support from our customers, thank you so much for supporting us. We have such good inventory right now, which is very unusual compared to the last few years, that we still have available food products. So if you want certified organic, lab-tested, storable food, here's your solution right here. There, I'm trying to reach over the Ranger buckets right here that we have in stock. And you can see some of the packs there of how they're sealed and vacuum packed for long-term storage. And then we've got mega buckets. There's wheat berries. And then we've got some blueberries on top there. That's freeze-dried, again, certified organic, laboratory-tested blueberries. We have kale. We have some other different berries and different kinds of vegetables as well. All of this available now at healthrangerstore.com. The only thing is, it might take a couple more days than usual to ship out because of the huge outpouring during our Black Friday event, which, again, just concluded. But on the healthrangerstore.com website, you'll see what we have. We have cocoa energized, astaxanthin soft gels, moringa leaf powder, of course, lab tested because there's a lot of lead in moringa. So we do our ICP-MS testing to make sure that yours is clean. Organic coconut milk powder, and so much more. If you go through the website, you can see all of our superfoods, our freeze-dried products, our best-selling products, a nascent iodine, which is a big seller right now, and so much more. Just check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. And with your support, we will continue to bring you compelling, informative, eye-opening interviews that help you understand and navigate the world around you. So thank you for all your support. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon and of healthrangerstore.com. Take care.